I think the floor is open now for questions or comments. For anybody with questions and comments.
I have a question for you, Dr. Mugangara.
Yes, please.
I'm wondering, I know the program's been around for a short period of time, but I'm wondering if you have data on the graduation rates or the attrition rates of girls who've been in the pre-entry program compared to boys of the same cohort or to girls who weren't in the program.
The ones who, the pre-entry engineering, we actually had the first graduates this year, the last year in October. 30 of them graduated, and none had dropped out in the process. And so far, the percentage out of the different affirmative measures that we've taken, it's only about 1% that have dropped out, because we have other arrangement also in terms of the scholarship for female students. And I think it's only 1%. That's a different arrangement. But for the engineering, so far, we had only one. Not among the ones who are graduating, though. But the ones, at least in first year, in second year, the one who have dropped out so far. But
I suppose comparable or better than other programs, than the boys or the people in, that weren't in the
pre-entry
program?
No, yeah, I guess it's almost the same. We haven't done much research around that part, but again, like I said, there are deliberate measures to make sure that they are supported throughout the process. And during the support program, it's not only for the girls, it's also for the boys who are willing to get into the remedial courses. They do take part into those programs. So,
I have a question, and this is giving me a wonderful opportunity to do my stretches. So this is for Peter. I'm wondering, you said that more boys than girls have disabilities. I think it came up in the other presentation as well, and there was something said about boys are more fragile health-wise. And maybe this is a question for a geneticist or a biologist or something, but I'm sure you have some ideas on this or other people in the room. I'm just curious, I mean, why do the boy students have more, have more disabilities?
I'm just wondering whether, from the health point of view, the doctors here might be better to answer it, this question. But I have discussed this issue with doctors, and there are a number of pieces of research which sort of suggest that there are possibilities. Boys apparently have different rates of myelinization of the central nervous system in comparison to girls, which links to estrogen levels in the blood, so I've read in the journals. And also I think what's important too is that because boys develop more slowly than girls, they spend a longer time period where they're actually open to disease and other illnesses, which can have obviously an impact on their development. There are also, I think, issues coming up from the brain research area that some people mentioned earlier that might link, that might have this sort of effect of making boys slightly more difficult to deal with or having different developmental patterns than girls. I mean, I think there are other issues which other people have touched on here. And one, obviously, is what is called the feminization of education. And I think that the people who talked about the bringing up healthy boys area sort of touched on this a bit. Education has become very literary. Is this something which doesn't really appeal so much to the boys' mind, as it were, than it does to the girls? There are many more women in education than there used to be. Certainly, as they were saying, the healthy boys group, teachers have a certain perception and a certain attitude to boys and the kind of behaviour that they show in classrooms. So there are a number of reasons, I think, you know, why boys are more identified than girls, and you know, part of it may be, the genuine thing may be, that they do have more problems. I think more boys are born, but more boys die. So you know, they do have these kind of early fragilities. But of course, actually, I don't know whether there's any research specifically linking that to identification of disability. I haven't read any of that. I haven't been told of any of that sort of work. But I think it is just an interesting question, I think, for equity, because obviously, in a way, I mean, equity is about the fair distribution of resources, and some of the issues that how do you decide what a fair distribution of resources actually is. And I think the disability question and raises this question par excellence, really, because, you know, if you're wanting to equate outcomes, for example, which is often an equity goal, the question is, how would you do that with including children with disabilities? Because it wouldn't really matter if you put the whole of the education resource system into these children. Many of them, or all of them probably, still wouldn't get anywhere near the kind of level of performance that you get from other children. And clearly that would be inequitable for the rest of the group. So these, I think, are tensions which still have to be resolved, exactly how you come to these conclusions, which is why I think that we need much more data on outcomes and inputs to be able to look at this much more specifically than we are able to at the moment. It goes beyond your question, I know. But
I have a question for Dr. Peter Evans. In terms of the global agenda, a policy borrowing in like disability policy and inclusive education policy as well. It seems to me that for a while we had the concept like special educational needs, like in the context of British educational reform and the Quarnot report, which created a lot of debates in the academic world. And then it turns out that the changing of concept didn't actually change the institutional problems of discrimination. And I've heard a lot of critics of those the changing concepts. So now we are dealing with the new concepts, such as the changing definition of disability, which I guess underpins by the new models, the social model. And I'm wondering to what extent you believe that the changing definition can inform policy, and to what extent it can be transformed by the institutional problems that do not actually create more equalization for students with disability.
Well, that's a complicated question. I mean, first, of course, it's clear the definition, the special education needs concept, is a social definition, and it certainly has that in common with the ICF concept. That's one thing. Whether the notion of special educational needs, which actually antedates the Warnock report, in fact, had any impact on policy, I think the answer to that question is almost certainly, in the UK, yes. For example, children with severe learning difficulties were moved from the Department of Health Administration to the Department of Education Administration in the early 70s after that notion started to be discussed in academic terms. There was a lot of dissatisfaction with the whole medical classification categories and the way that education was organized around that, those categories, and much more focus on what schools needed to do to meet the needs of individual pupils. And of course, some of you here have probably seen the New Brunswick example in your in the Heritage Room, which is a good example, I think, of how inclusive education has developed and can respond to the notion of schools having to make adaptations to their structure and methods in order to meet the needs of pupils. I mean, I don't see the concept of special educational needs disappearing anytime soon. I think it's getting close to its sell-by date. We played for a long time with whether we wanted to use it at all at OECD, but at the end of the day decided we had to keep it because if we didn't, we'd lose our constituency. And because it has these complicated meanings in different countries, it doesn't really mean anything very much in an international context. The other kind of nuance, I think, on the policy development question is, of course, that ministers making policies in departments of education are not only influenced by research and so on, they're heavily influenced by parents and teacher unions, particularly in an area like this where you're talking about major reforms to an educational structure. And in general terms, I think it will be true to say that neither parents nor teacher unions are globally agreed that inclusion is the best way forward. And so in countries like the UK, there's a deliberate policy decision not to make a policy and to leave it to parents to choose and to live with the two systems running in parallel and just wait for the fullness of time to emerge and for a different kind of structure to appear.
So can I have one more question?
Okay. Is it possible?
Maybe we'll let you follow up
during the break. Okay. Okay, any more questions? No. Thank you.
We're eager to give you a chance to follow up. We just want to give everybody a chance to follow up with the panel, too. Before we go, I just want to make three observations. One is that I think Peter reminded us of how little we know about some of these things, how poor our measurement has been, how the extent to which, as the questioner reminded us, I think as well, we don't even know whether boys actually are disadvantaged because they're overdiagnosed, as we started to hear in an earlier presentation today, whether they're labeled in some countries as having disabilities when they don't, whether girls are underdiagnosed, and then we have this whole clump. I'm grateful that Albert reminded us of the link between the morning, which was the early years, and this afternoon session about the later years, that when people have already been left behind in those earlier years, then there's very little chance to move up the ladder. And to me, that's why it was so important to hear about Finella's program, because it is, in fact, this way to take people who haven't had the advantage, who are behind, and get them up the ladder. And I think the crystallizing point about that in response to Josh's question about how they do, these are girls who didn't make the score to get into university, and then the affirmative action is not to let them in without making the score. The affirmative action is to give them the training program. They have this pre-university training program, and then those who make the same bar as all the boys, all the women, young women, make the same bar as the young men, depending how you feel about what you'd like to call late teenagers, they all make it in. So it's actually a program designed to deal with this problem of disadvantage early and then moving up the ladder. We're going to move after the break from these specific questions, looking in detail at specific populations, but also in detail at specific programs, to end with two more global views about what we can do when we really want to move the whole world community together forward. Before we do that, I hope you'll enjoy tea, coffee, snacks together, and the fellows will still be in the Heritage Room if you didn't have a chance to see their great presentations. Thank you. Thank you.